This is my message for the greatest country in the world. In the light of the recent events in the United States, I felt morally obliged to shed light on a very similar chain of events that took place in my country during the 90s. The cause of those events was the same, a constantly re-emerging ultimate evil, nihilistic, non-theistic religion slash cult that caused hundreds of millions of deaths in the 20th century and countless suffering. Now, proponents of that religion want to run the experiment once again, and in that experiment, you, people of America, will be lab mice. Not so long ago, I was a lab mouse of dictators in my country. That country was Yugoslavia. Rather than giving you lessons about history of my country, I want to give you the timeline of the events which led to an extremely bloody war and dissolution of Yugoslavian Federacy. I will leave it to you to make conclusions about similarities with recent events in the United States. In the final stages, even the army was attacked during the negotiated retreat and 50 or 100 soldiers were killed. And just like that, Yugoslavia found itself in a civil war. City against city, village against village, family against family, and so on until the whole territories became cleaned of the members of the enemy group. Genocide, ethnic cleansing, relocation of hundreds of thousands of people were everyday news. It lasted 4 years. 100,000 people died. Some 500,000 were displaced. Those people lost everything. Yugoslavia was drowned in the bloods of thousands of innocent people and destroyed forever. You might wonder how we let that happen. How could we let things get so much out of control? That was because we didn't realize who were the real enemies, the enemies of the Yugoslav people as a whole. Instead, we were brainwashed into buying the story that we, the people, are the enemies of each other, while our true enemies were advancing with their sick, demented agenda, which had as the ultimate goal the total and unlimited power. This brings me to present times, the year 2020, and to you, American people. Unless you were living under the rock, you might have noticed that something very strange and vicious is happening in your country, but you're not exactly sure what it is and where it came from. Because the last time you checked, you were one nation under God, a country of free, independent individuals with equal rights under the law and core values of life, liberty and pursuit of happiness. All of a sudden, there is protesting, rioting, arson, murder, destruction of public and private property, and lots of people screaming how unbelievably racist and unjust America is. And before you even manage to prepare your morning coffee and turn the TV on, once united Americans are at each other's throat, and bunch of nice and caring people on TV are telling you how you should accept the violence and hatred against Americans because you deserve it. If you have paid attention to what happened in Yugoslavia, I hope you have realized by now that your true enemies are not your fellow Americans. The ones who are, they want you to hate each other and to kill each other, while they're taking away your constitutional rights, your freedoms, and your country, your heritage, your way of life, and the future of your children. Although it is more than obvious that there are very well-organized groups used as tools to install and amplify hate and to create division between Americans, they are only metastases which have spread through once healthy America. Of course, they are violent terrorist organizations and they must be removed as well. But the main cancer that is killing America, the one where all this mayhem is coming from, is somewhere else. The real and extremely dangerous enemies of American people are the elected officials in your government, in your states, in your courts. Representatives, governors, mayors, judges. The ones who are pulling the ropes. The ones who hate America and American people so much that would even sacrifice the life and prosperity of their own children just to see it burn to the ground and American blood spilled. Those are really sick, demented, ideologically possessed people. And they are in high positions in the government. They are governing your states, your cities, and making decisions in your courts. You know very well who they are. You know very well what they already did to once beautiful and prosperous American states and cities. They are resentful, power and bloodthirsty. They want you and your children suffering in misery and begging them for mercy. They won't stop, no matter how much you try to appease them. Unless you, American people, stop them. You're maybe thinking this is not possible. But think again. How many of them tyrants are out there? And how many of you decent American people? What makes them think they can do whatever they want with you? That they can play you for a fool over and over again? And that they're invincible? What makes them think they're gods, morally and intellectually superior compared to you, freedom-loving Americans? Yes, you guessed it. The fact that they managed to get away with it every single time. They faced no pushback and not a single consequence for their crimes against American people. The time has come for them to pay for their treason. How you should act? First thing that you must do, stop caring whether you've been called a racist, a white supremacist, a selfish person who wants to spread the C-1984, or whatever nice name they have for you. This irrational fear of stigma, a phobia of being called a racist, has way more destructive implications than you can even imagine. Stop caring whether you'll offend anyone. Number of people offended by you practicing your First Amendment rights is directly proportional to how successful you are in that. Which means, the more offended, the merrier. Stop attempting to have a fact or logic-based rational conversation. Stop explaining yourself. It's useless. You're wasting your precious time and energy. They have a playbook, and changing their minds is not part of it. Second, exercise your Second Amendment rights. This means, study carefully and in detail gun laws in your state. Next, arm yourself. If you have never used a gun before, make sure to take a basic gun training. This is very important because you must know how to use a gun properly to protect yourself, your family, and your property, so that you can avoid hurting yourself or innocent people as a consequence of improper gun use. Be a responsible gun owner. Third and most important, exercise your First Amendment rights. Of course, it is very important to vote in November, but I'm afraid it will not be enough. I have seen such a diversity of ways socialists used to steal the elections in Yugoslavia, and I'm absolutely sure your tyrants will give their best to do the same. You must act now. You must go out on the streets, peacefully assemble and protest against tyranny and infringement of your God-given rights. Millions and millions of you decent American people. You must have your voices heard. You must send a very loud and a very clear message to the elected officials in the federal government and in your states that enough is enough, and that you want them to take action now against tyranny. Remind them why you voted for them and why they're elected. Remind them of their sacred duty to protect the vision of founding fathers of the United States of America. Tell them you want your constitutional rights defended and protected. Tell them you want your history preserved. Tell them you want to be able to freely exercise your rights to free speech, to be able to freely and openly show the love for your country, to be able to proudly put American flag in front of your house, and to openly show your pride of your heritage, your culture, and your nation. Tell them you stand proudly with American law enforcement and that you got their back in the same way you want them to have yours. Tell them you want to be treated as grown-up individuals who can make their own decisions. Tell them that there is no place for socialism in America. Tell them you want the traitors of American people out of their offices and out of government. Tell them you want them charged and prosecuted for treason and crimes against humanity. And that if they're not removed from the government and from their offices, that you, freedom-loving Americans, will unleash all your anger on tyrants and you will remove them yourself. It is your constitutional obligation to protect the legacy of founding fathers and to fight against any form of tyrannical government which infringes upon your constitutional rights. Never forget why you celebrate the Independence Day. Don't be afraid whether you will get attacked for exercising your First Amendment rights. You certainly will be. If that happens, defend yourself. Remember, self-defense is not violence, no matter what they tell you and what they accuse you of. President Trump is on your side, and on the side of liberty. Because if he weren't, they wouldn't try this hard to sabotage him in every way possible, to make a nightmare out of his life and his presidency, and to remove him from the office. He's in their way of them getting what they want. But he cannot fight this battle alone. He's having a very hard time right now defending your freedoms. That's why you must show him you stand tall and proud with him, united in a fight against tyranny, against hate and violence, and against the ultimate evil of socialism. You must show your open and unlimited support to his vision of draining the swamp and protecting the law and order and freedoms of American people. You must understand that, besides being a gatekeeper of free America, President Trump is also a gatekeeper of the free world. This means that if we, free people of the world, lose America, we will lose the world as well. You must not make the same mistakes us Yugoslavs made, because the only casualties of our mistakes were ourselves. This is different because now the future of the whole free world is in your hands. Having all that said, I hope you will go out on 4th of July in tens of millions and celebrate Independence Day with your president as you should, as free Americans. God bless President Trump and God bless America.
Hey folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. A lot of you say, Eric, why don't you get better guests? Well, you can stuff it because I got Victor Davis Hanson on right now. Dr. Hanson, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Listen, you're a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, but I think at this point, the Hoover Institution describes themselves as we're the ones who have a senior fellow who's Victor Davis Hanson. You've been out there a lot recently talking about current events in your wonderful way. Things are so crazy right now. I thought if we could possibly get you on the program, it'll be an encouragement to a lot of people. So what do you see? There's so much to say, but begin wherever you like.
Well, I think the protest over the death of George Floyd then morphed into splinter groups and itself went radical and often violent. And now it's holistic. And by that, I mean it's entered, if I could use the historical analogy, 1792 to 1794 Jacobin Reign of Terror movement. And by that, I mean everything is on the table. I never imagined that NPR would be telling listeners to decolonize their library, or there would be movements of women to shave their heads so they wouldn't have non-African American hair, or they wouldn't privilege their whiteness.
Not everybody knows what you were referring to with the NPR comment. So for the sake of my audience, tell them of the horror to which you just alluded.
Well, National Public Radio had a commentator on that suggested that we could all do our part for this revolutionary movement by eliminating authors that were too white, whether they reflected white values or they were intrinsically white. I'm not sure what she meant. And by the same token, on social media, you get these bizarre outbursts of children ranting and screaming that they hate their parents for being racist and not woke. You get young women who think that if they remove their intrinsic signs of whiteness by shaving their head, they'll somehow have more revolutionary fides. There's movements to ban or to limit cop shows on television, reruns like Law and Order. There is, as you see, defund. At first it was curtail the police, now abolish the police. I'm getting communiques, I think you are too, and your listeners are, where everything from 401ks to university administrators are sending messages that we all have to pledge formally what we're going to do to promote racial diversity and identity politics. We had an email from a dean at Stanford University where I work, quoting Ms. Shakur, the woman who killed policemen in the 80s, or I think it was the early 80s or late 70s, who now is a Cuban exile. And in the quote, it was, "All we have to lose is our change," which we all remember was a slogan from Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto. So we're entering a space now that's even transcending the violence. When you have FBI people or healthcare workers that are in re-education camp mentalities where they bend a knee, they take a formal oath collectively. We have people like quarterback Drews, Mr. Brees, who on Monday says that he likes to support the iconic American flag. On Tuesday, he feels that his whole career is going to be ruined unless he not only renounces that earlier statement and profession, but he and his wife sort of suggest that the problem really is white privilege. And I could go on, but I think people get the impression that it's affecting all aspects of life, sports, entertainment, the military. We've had, I think it was 12 generals came out and admirals and suggested that Donald Trump in some fashion was either fascist, Mussolini-like, Nazi-like, or he could be navigated around.
You wrote a long piece about that specifically for National Review, unless it was some other Victor Davis Hanson. So I want to talk to you about that. But before we talk about Mattis and Kelly, and I thought it was utterly disgraceful of what they said, absolutely disgraceful and despicable. But before we get to that, I want to ask you, since you're an historian, it seems to me that if, just to, at the 50,000 foot level of history, we know that, in 1775 and 6 and 1787, we proceeded with a republic where we knew we were deferring a battle. We knew, for example, that the pro-slavery forces and the anti-slavery forces would have to put aside that issue and that we would move forward. And it wasn't until 1860 that we were forced to deal with it. There was a reckoning, a separation, as it were, of the wheat and tares, which had coexisted 67 years. It seems to me what's happening now is similar in that we have had baked in from the founding elements of American Revolution with elements of the French Revolution. In other words, there are two models that have to some extent coexisted. And it seems that this is that reckoning. This is similarly a civil war, or will become one, where we deal with this. At least that's how it appears to me now. I just want to get your thoughts on that, because when everything you describe, I mean, this is the French Revolution.
I think the American Revolution was founded on liberty and equality of opportunity. And if people were by nature unequal for some circumstance, then there was a moral role for churches, communities, traditions, families to, in their own particular ways, and government to help the indigent or the less fortunate or the sick or the maimed or those that had tragic happenstance. But it was not a French Revolution holistic idea of equality of result, egalitarianism, fraternity, stuff down your throat, the destruction of the church. And remember, I mean, the French Revolution, they extended the week from 7 days to 10. They renamed the months of the year. It was an effort to completely, in every aspect of the citizen's life, change him. And that's what we are, I think, witnessing now with this movement. They're not content to have the liberal county district attorney, the liberal state district attorney in Minnesota, the liberal governor, the liberal mayor handle this atrocious behavior by a particular cop and investigate it. They're not happy. They're not satisfied that the number of black Americans who were killed unarmed by the police is less than whites, considerably less, about half, or that interracial crime is asymmetrical. That doesn't matter now. We're in a revolutionary fervor movement that's going to change everything that we look at, from our sports to our politics, everything. So that's right. And why did it happen? Well, globalization hollowed out the country and it enriched the two coasts. So there was a geographical element, as there was in 1860. There was also, I think, an inability. We have 55 million people in the United States that were not born here. We gave up on the melting pot of assimilation, integration, and intermarriage. So we have large swaths of the people who are not accustomed, have not been familiarized with America. And then there was an economic and educational crisis where we sent millions of young Americans to be indoctrinated in the university. They neither got the confidence of being educated, but they did have the ignorance of being educated. Ignorance and arrogance of being branded with a degree were a fatal combination. And they ended up with per capita debt of about $100,000 to $200,000, $1.6 trillion. When they went out, they said, I've got a degree.
But forgive me, Dr. Hansen. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back to continue what is an important conversation, folks. Don't go away. Folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Victor Davis Hansen, Senior Fellow with the Hoover Institution. Dr. Hansen, there's so much to talk about here. I want to get to your article about the generals that you published in National Review, but I want to continue what we're talking about a little bit longer. What I was saying earlier is that to me, there is a reckoning. In other words, these elements, these utopianist French Revolution style elements have always been with us. They have manifested themselves now and again in our history. But it seems to me that there's a final reckoning. We are being forced, as it were, to deal with that thing. And in the same way that because of Donald Trump, we are for the first time confronting China's malfeasance. In other words, these things have existed, but we've deferred and deferred. And there's something about this president, about this time in history, that I think is we're being called to the battle, so to speak. And so those of us who advocate for American revolution and the vision of the founders have to really make that case, and that this election to some extent will be a referendum on whether we choose the French Revolution or the American Revolution. God forbid we would do the former, but it seems to me that those are the issues.
I think they are. I think, as I said, globalization, the failure of the education system, the failure of a dynamic economy that could incorporate recently graduated students that had high expectations about their own worth, and they found them sorely disappointed. And then social media that tends to be an accelerant or catalyst to unchecked ideas. All of that is a perfect storm. But Donald Trump was not a Bush. He was not a McCain. He was not a Romney. He said, you know, I'm not going to let this insidious process continue. I'm going to try, whether it's appointing judges or offering commentary on Colin Kaepernick, or whether it's getting out on front on the abortion issue, whatever it was, he said, it's time to, in a Reagan fashion, in 19, take a stand. And that set people off. And it set people off in the Republican establishment who, to tell you the truth, they preferred to lose nobly and to be accepted as part of the establishment than to win in a way that might question their cultural or their social fides. And that's new. We've never had the Republican establishment as we know it, a Colin Powell, the Bushes, Bill Kristol, Jonah Goldberg, George Will, attack a conservative because they felt that in some way his mannerisms or his comportment were not conducive to conservative advocacy.
Well, that's to me the tremendous value of Trump is he's flushed the birds from the bushes. We can finally see, or the bushes from the bushes. We can finally see what we were dealing with all along. And I have to say, to me as an American who voted for some of the names mentioned, it's heartbreaking to see George W. Bush and Romney and Colin Powell go that far, go as far as they've gone recently. It's heartbreaking. We knew that they were not Ronald Reagan, but to see them, be closer to Quisling than to Reagan is disheartening.
Well, I mean, you're disheartened because I think you're making the elementary calculus, and you're saying to yourself, and your readers are doing the same as you are, and they're saying, wait a minute, the fact that Trump is crass and can be crude is more important to these very well-off, very well-situated, established grandees than 300 conservative judges that affect my future, or a 3% GDP growth or minority unemployment or getting out of that awful Iran deal. All that doesn't matter because they feel that as conservative elites, they have the money or the influence to exempt themselves from the ideologies that are so pernicious and fall so heavily on the middle class. So yeah, that's why we're upset about it.
It's a stunning thing. Let's go to the article that you wrote for National Review about Mattis and the other generals. I thought it was really shameful. It is shameful that Mattis would have said what he said. Just absolutely shameful and horrifying. But talk more about what you say in this article.
Well, I had 3 points, and I didn't. The generals, if they are going to criticize a sitting president, they have to be careful because there is a code of military conduct, and it's been argued that it applies to retired generals. So that's something that we don't enforce. It's like the Logan Act, but it's there, and people should try to at least respect the spirit of it. It was drafted during the MacArthur Truman, and it wasn't to protect popular presidents. It was to protect unpopular presidents against demagogic popular generals. The second thing was, if you're going to make these things, let's just ask for a modicum of a few rules. Don't compare a sitting president who was elected to a Nazi, as with a metaphor like Mattis did, or Mussolini as McCaffrey did, or Michael Hayden, you know, a picture of Birkenau, Auschwitz. Two, don't suggest that they're traitors, as Clapper has done and McRaven has done, and don't suggest with a wink and a nod there might be an extra constitutional way of getting rid of them. As McRaven said, the sooner the better, Trump is gone. And Mattis said, we don't need Trump. We can unite without him. We have to resist him. Not when these people have so many contacts in the military. Don't do it in concert, as if out of the woodwork, suddenly on a preconceived note, we get 7 or 8 or 9 of these people coming out voicing anger. And finally, be factual. Mattis said there was only a small number of protesters. Not even the left believes that. And Mullen said that there was wide use of tear gas. That's been denied in the case of Washington by the Pentagon. And Clapper McCaffrey said that Trump was a Russian asset. Not only did Clapper under oath not testify to that, said he had no evidence, in fact, but we know that Mueller spent 22 months and ascertained that he wasn't a Russian asset. So don't lie to us. And finally, don't be selective. If all of these people say that Trump is acting, and this was the stimulus that got them out of the woodwork, that he was acting extra constitutionally by employing federal troops, then don't tell us that's never been done or it's unconstitutional when Madison and Lincoln and Cleveland and LBJ and JFK and George W. Bush have all done it. And more importantly, don't be selective. So they didn't say a word when Obama bypassed the Senate for the Iran deal, when he weaponized the IRS, when he surveilled the AP reporters, when he weaponized the FBI and the CIA and the DOJ to go with the Steele dossier after an oppositional campaign, when he did a quid pro quo about missile defense and giving space for his own election. I could go on, but you get the drift of it. They didn't say a word. And they didn't say a word when Michael Flynn was ambushed or a FISA court was diluted or documents were altered by FBI. So what?
Well, look, there's some people from whom we expect this kind of thing. I mean, when you mentioned Clapper and stuff, to my mind, they're buffoons that no one takes seriously. No thinking American. But when we're talking about people like Mattis and Kelly, that, to my mind, is it's a new level, and it points up, now it's become a hoary old term, the deep state. I mean, the idea that there are people invested in something other than the will of the American people, other than genuine self-government along the lines of the Constitution, that they're invested in that, and they have power, and they are now, they're flexing their muscles.
Well, they are. I mean, and they're national icons. And the common theme in all of them is that in their considered expert opinion, they feel that Donald J. Trump, in their view as constitutional lawyers, and his unbiased senior Wiseman has violated the Constitution. So they have taken upon themselves to step forward and warn the American people that he should, as I said, be moved, according to Murray, sooner the better, sooner than later, or, you know, Mattis. We can unite without the elected president, or McCaffrey. You know, he's Mussolini, and he's a Russian asset. So if you were in the military, Eric, and you were a ranking officer, and you grew up with McRaven and Mattis and Kelly, all of these people, and all of a sudden they were telling you that you had a traitor, a Russian asset, a person who was fascist, who was like the Nazis who opposes it, what would you think would be the loyal constitutional thing to do?
Sometimes I think that it would be somehow healthy or clarifying if Trump actually behaved like a fascist and authoritarian, since they keep accusing him of this. I mean, I cannot imagine what it is that he did recently to get Mattis and Kelly to say these things. When we come back, I'll ask you more about that. Folks, I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Our website, MetaxasTalk.com. Folks, I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson. Dr. Hanson, tell us, if you would, what is it that that Mattis, General Mattis, used as a pretext to say such ugly things about the commander-in-chief recently? What set him off, do you suppose?
Well, Donald Trump had a meeting in front of the press with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and a secretary of defense, announcing that if there was a cause or there was a reason, that he was quite willing to either nationalize the National Guard, federalize the National Guard, or send out U.S. troops in the manner that at least 10 other presidents have done. And in their way of thinking, he used their good name to further an agenda that they don't agree with. And then they tried to package that opposition in enlightened constitutional worry that what he did was illegal, but they never induced any evidence. They never said this is against the law for the U.S. commander in chief to consider or even use federal troops when violence is beyond the ability of the local police to control. And that was factually not correct.
But isn't the whole point that they know that the activist, formerly mainstream media, are on their side and they can get this narrative out there? Isn't that what they're relying on?
Well, you're saying that, Eric, because you know that, as we said earlier, they're selective in their constitutional outrage. So we had a president that systematically bypassed the treaty-making ability and singularity of the Senate, and he surveilled American citizens, and he unleashed the FBI and the IRS against his political enemies. And that didn't seem to bother them, at least to the degree that they would speak out that there was a cancer or an anti-constitutional menace. So yeah, they're selective because they're progressives, and they hide that with this idea that they're bipartisan. But
given everything that you know, what do you suppose will happen in the next few months and in this election?
I think the following: that we're in a Katrina-like hysteria, and most people would give concessions. I don't think Donald Trump will. And we're going to go through a Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street, Katrina hysteria. But the news cycle over the next 180 days is not conducive for a leftist candidate. And why do I say that? Very quickly, Joe Biden is not cognitively able to campaign, to debate, to go to a convention. And that's going to be more apparent as he comes out. The lockdown, whether we like it or not, whether you support it or not, has been totally discredited by the millions of people that were allowed to go shoulder to shoulder to protest and to do damage. No medical professional now can say you have to be consistent. It's not going to work. The virus itself, for some reason, maybe weather, maybe mutations, maybe improved treatment, has not been killing people at an increased rate. In addition to that, the economy is surprising people that it's starting to pick up. And ironically, the idea of these demonstrations have helped it, because they're going to get people out and say, if they're doing it, I'm going to open up my shop. And finally, I think we're going to hear from John Durham, and there's going to be and all of those will have a perfect storm if Trump can keep us cool and not have to retort or respond to all of these provocations and just keep his eye focused on keeping order and his agenda and restoring the economy, and he'll be fine. But a lot of people are going to abandon him in the next 2 weeks because they're terrified.
Well, I have to say that the joy of all this is that it's so clarifying. You know, when you see people like the Bushes and Colin Powell and Mitt Romney and, you know, finally show us who they are, it's heartbreaking, but it's clarifying. And it makes those of us who didn't want to believe that so many Republicans were no different effectively than the Democrats, it at least we see these things. The question, of course, is will the American voter see enough to choose Trump in the fall? Because it seems to me that given the acceleration toward this French Revolution style madness, that if we were, say, to elect a Joe Biden, it wouldn't be the Joe Biden of 10 or 20 years ago. It would be the Joe Biden, you know, of the AOC future. So the stakes, unfortunately, seem to me that much higher.
I think so, too. And it's not a sustainable opposition. You remember from history that Robespierre, once he unleashed the Jacobins and the Reign of Terror, he guillotined his own, and then he was guillotined. And it continued those cycles of increasing radicalism until somebody called Napoleon said they need a whiff of grape shot, and that was the end of it. And so it ended up with an authoritarian who was more authoritarian than the Bourbon King Louis that they got rid of. Right. So my point is that when they fire the op-ed editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer, the New York Times, or they start going after liberal TV people or Hollywood, then you can see this thing is accelerating. It's almost as if it's a nuclear reaction. Somebody took out the control rods. And I don't think it's going to stop. And it's not based on fact. And so that by that, I mean, we say to ourselves, what's the data of unarmed black men killed by police per year? I think last year it was 12. And what's the interracial disparity between violence between race? Those data don't support the revolutionary fervor.
Yeah, we had Heather McDonald talking about that recently. And it is very, very interesting, to say the least, to see the left eating its own. I like the idea of the nuclear reaction just taking off. We're going to be back, folks. I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson. You won't go away, so I won't tell you not to. Folks, I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson. Dr. Hanson, do you suppose that I keep saying that I think somehow Biden will not end up being the candidate, that it's things are so crazy right now. The idea that we don't know if there's going to be a convention, the idea that he seems infirm, that even his own party is not enthusiastic about him. I keep thinking, and this sounds like a conspiracy theory, maybe it is, that someone like Hillary Clinton will push her way up to the bar somehow, that the things are so dramatic right now that things can happen that have not really happened in our lifetimes.
Yeah, I think everybody shares your confusion, because there's two things that are mutually exclusive. He's not able to campaign or go to a convention or debate Donald Trump. He was on The View the other day, and it was tragic. But on the other hand, there's not a mechanism to get him out. He's the leading vote getter in the primaries, and Bernie Sanders is the second. So there'll have to be some quirky deal that removes him. I think a more likely scenario is that he'll be a virtual candidate. They'll carry him across the finish line. He won't debate. He won't be in public. He will outsource his campaigning responsibilities to his future progressive cabinet. And then the vice presidency, as it was in 1944, will be with a wink and a nod the presidency. And that will go to a progressive woman, probably an identity politics candidate, with the idea that agenda that was rejected in the Democratic primary will now be reified through the appointment of the vice president once Joe Biden carries her across the finish line. And I think that's for now, that's their tentative strategy.
Well, I've been thinking the same thing, but I still wonder if Hillary Clinton isn't going to push her way in there somehow, because I think that she thinks herself as that she really is the standard bearer of the party. And Biden has been so laughable. And so, I mean, you get to a point, as you said, where it is tragic. It is sad because he doesn't seem to be able to think his way out of a wet paper bag or talk himself out of a wet paper bag. And the only question is why the polls seem to be showing that he's ahead of Trump. That's what baffles me the most.
Well, he's ahead of Trump because he's not, he's a construct. It's just, are you happy with Trump right now? And we know that when Trump gets to about 46%, as he was in 2016, and where he's been commonly before the COVID, then he wins, because it's usually underreported by 2 or 3 points. And then in the states that matter, he has a better lead. But he's gone through Mueller, he's gone through impeachment, he's gone through COVID, he's gone through the lockdown, he's gone through economic collapse, and now he's gone through rioting. And the common denominator, all of these have been weaponized by the left, and their strategy is to make it socially and culturally unacceptable to vote for Trump or to say you're for Trump. And almost as if the independent swing voter in those states like Wisconsin or Minnesota or Michigan or Pennsylvania will get in a fetal position and say, make it all go away. I can't take it any longer. Just be nice. I don't like confrontation. Maybe if we give you Donald Trump, you'll let us alone. And the way that George Bush in 2006, when Iraq got kind of crazy and they said he was a Nazi and Hitler and they didn't fight back and they don't understand how the left operates, but I think that's their strategy, to intimidate the swing voter, to make it all go away.
Well, that's, again, the difference, thank God, between Trump and George W. Bush and others, is that he does fight. He doesn't know how not to fight. He can harm himself sometimes. But generally speaking, I think it has just forced this clarification, as I've said a few times, which makes the left look like what they are. And I think your average American voter, when they see that, they may not say anything publicly, but they're not going to vote for that.
Yeah, I think so. I'm walking around my neighborhood. I live on a 40-acre almond orchard, and what do I hear all of a sudden for the first time in my life from my Mexican-American neighbors all over? Gunfire all night long. Are they celebrating? Are they shooting? No, they're out with target practice with their handguns. This last month, there were 6 million gun sales. It's an all-time record. That's very regrettable, but what I'm trying to suggest is that beneath MSNBC and the radar at CNN, the New York Times, there is an entire population across racial lines. And we see it sometimes with the polls of African Americans who are very disturbed about some of this, that people are afraid, that they feel that the state either won't or can't provide security and doesn't want to, and that somehow it's going to pick and choose particular populations that needs to be punished for historical sins, right. And they will be punished. And so they're afraid that that level of big brother intrusiveness can affect their families, and they're going to arm themselves, and they're going to not say a word. But if you come to them, I think they'll resist. And I think their attitude is just wait till November. I'll smile. You think I'm fine, and I'll go in and I'm not going to vote for you. I think there's going to be a lot of that.
I think there's a lot of that here in New York City. I live in Manhattan, and I have to say that since we've had these riots here, and since de Blasio has made it very, very clear that he's against his own police and that he's applauding his daughter for being arrested, I think your average New Yorker is either thinking, I'm going to move away, or I'm going to get a gun, or I'm going to do something. You know, we wouldn't talk about it, but the idea that I might be sitting at an outdoor cafe and that a mob might come and threaten my wife and daughter, you don't think that I'm not going to do what I need to do to make sure that my loved ones are not harmed. I think, most men instinctively think that way. And, maybe it's not a gun, maybe it's a chair. But the point is that I think many Americans are thinking this way, especially if you live in a city.
And I think that goes one step further even, which is the decisive point, and that is they think if they were to be shot or their business would be ruined, the collective culture, the elites would say, well, that was a white-owned business. It didn't matter. Or there's always collateral damage. To make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs. So the state and the people who are mayors and governors are not worried about people of any color being shot or killed.
Oh, no, the AG of Massachusetts literally said that, fires yes. aren't a bad thing because they lead to, new forest growth. We're going to be back, folks. Final segment with Victor Davis Hanson. Don't go away. And I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson, who evidently lives in an almond orchard in rural California. How sweet it is. Is that your childhood home?
Yes, I'm sitting upstairs in the house where I grew up. It was built by my great-great-grandmother in 1870, old farmhouse.
So your great-great-grandmother was, she had pretty big forearms, obviously, if she was able to put up a house. There are very few Californians of that kind of provenance going that far back. But what you just said in the segment, that your Mexican neighbors, you hear them taking target practice. I mean, this is quite an anecdote because they're worried that they're not going to be protected. They need to know how to use guns. What we were just saying is that I think that there are people all across America. We know that there are people who are thinking along these lines. And it seems somebody suggested that, your average soccer mom is going to vote for safety. And that if it means voting for Trump, over Biden, she will do that because the idea that the cops won't protect her and her kids is it's a line she's not willing to cross.
Yeah, I think people initially they were so outraged by the death of George Floyd they really wanted to pay attention to race, and then the more they listened to the left, they realized that the left's goal was not to make race incidental rather than essential to one's persona. It was just the opposite. They were going to pick particular historically aggrieved groups and make the necessary government adjustments. And how that translated on the street was a sense of fatality, fatalism. People said, I understand now that if I'm beat up, if my brother is a cop who's hit over the head, if a trucker takes the wrong street and they beat him up, people don't care. They feel that those people, because of their so-called privilege, had it coming. So if something happens to me, it won't be a cause célèbre. I'll just be a statistic, and I don't want that to happen. And that you can treat people bad, but when you start to humiliate them and add that wage to their discomfort, then people feel they have no choice. And that's what we're getting to. And we're going to get not supposed to use the word backlash, but we're going to get a pushback that people don't understand.
I think you're right. I keep thinking things are going to calm down and I'm going to get to talk to you about Homer. And we're not quite there, are we?
No.
We're not quite there. What do you think, again, we've just got about a minute or so, but what do you think is going to happen? I asked you this earlier, but do you think Trump will win? Do you think that we have enough resources of freedom-loving Americans to get us over the finish line in November?
Yeah, I envision it as something like stepping stones in a minefield, that if you follow the stepping stones and you're very careful and you understand you have no margin of error, you cannot get in a Twitter spat with Joe Scarborough anymore. You have no time to do that. You have to focus. But if he does that and people make the necessary calculations, then they can get through this minefield. And they'll get to the other side, and people a year from now will say, wow, people shaved their heads. They screamed at their parents. They got rid of their white authors. That was a really insane moment. But we have to get there first. We're in the middle of a reign of terror, and we have to get to the other side.
And do you think there are voices around this president who are saying this to him?
Yes, I know that for a fact.
You do?
Yes.
I wanted to end on a positive note, and I have done so. Victor Davis Hanson, thank you for that final word of encouragement and for everything that preceded it. We're honored to have you with us, and we look forward to speaking with you again as soon as possible. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Quick question. Do you share the values of the people who sell you things?
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell.
I can tell you that I do. I love Mike Lindell, not just Mike Lindell, but what he stands for.
And I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word, read our Bibles, and spend time with our families.
The dude said that at the White House. How can you not love him?
What difference at this point does it make?
No, actually, it does make a difference. How you spend your money is as important as how you vote, and you don't want to, you know, help elect some crazy guy, do you?
You may cut me, man, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head.
Did he just say that?
If you fell off sideways, you landed on the darn cement.
So, if you want your money to support good things, visit MyPillow.com.
Corn Pop was a bad dude.
And please use the discount code Eric or Metaxas.
If you use pomade in your hair, you had to wear a bathing cap.
A bathing cap? Anyway, please go to MyPillow.com and use the code Eric or Metaxas.
Corn Pop was a bad dude.